Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is John Middlecoff from 3 and Out with John Middlecoff. Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, if you guys like to cook outdoors, and you oughta, you should check out the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle. So this is a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
Training camps are kicking off, and we're celebrating this time of the year by giving away free upgrades and a signed Le'Veon Bell jersey. It's completely free to enter. Just visit fantasypros.com/giveaway to get all the details on how you can enter and win. All right, on to the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. I'm Bobby Sylvester with Mike Tagliere as always. You can find us on Twitter at BobbyFantasyPro and at Mike Tagliere NFL. So Tags, I went to this Brazilian steakhouse last night.
Uh-oh.
I still feel full, man. Take it or leave it. I won't have to eat for another week.
I think I had a better night than you, though. Like, I'm just going to be honest about this. So I've taken a slight break from my diet, and I ate Giordano's pizza last night.
Ooh,
so, yeah,
we both won.
I win this battle. you know how we both feel about the Brazilian steakhouse. It's just overdone for someone like you and I, where we have minimal needs. We like our pizza.
Don't put words in my mouth, man. I love the pizza, but I love the Brazilian steakhouse too. I want them both.
Hold on a second. If you could pick one dinner for the rest of your life, which one do you pick?
Pizza.
There you go.
especially Chicago pizza. So we've got a really cool guest today, Joe Pizzapia. He hosts an award-winning FSTA radio show and is the number one best-selling author of the Fantasy Football Black Book series. You can find him on Twitter at JoePizzapia17. Joe, thanks for taking the time to join us.
I'm very happy to be here. I'm from Brooklyn, so I've got a lot to say about your pizza discussion.
Oh, God.
Because, look, it's not that I don't like the Chicago pizza, but it's all about L&B Spumoni Gardens in Brooklyn. That's where pizza begins and ends. And if you don't believe me, ask Bob Harris, because when he came into New York, that's where I sent him, and it's changed his world. So just wanted to put that out
there. I mean, I'm going to have to go there now. I've been trying to avoid New York my entire life, because I really just don't like people that much.
We don't either.
Yeah, okay, well, I mean, there's so many people there. Like, I live in the woods. Nobody even knows I exist outside of the people who listen to the podcast.
But, Bobby, it's millions of people who would rather be left alone. It's like a city of you.
I don't know, man. The pizza is tempting.
Oh, man.
The pizza is tempting. I love Chicago pizza, but I love Brooklyn style. I would love to get real Brooklyn pizza.
Well, this is a little different. I'll send you a picture of it over Twitter or something.
Sounds good.
It's a whole different thing. The sauce is on top. It's a Sicilian pie. It's a little different. Now, look, all the regular pizza in Brooklyn's better anyway, but still, this is a very specific kind. And if you're from that neighborhood, everybody knows what I'm talking about. And it's like gold. It's like one of these things that someone like should go buy. If someone in my family goes through Brooklyn now on their way back to Jersey or wherever we are right now, and they don't stop and get a pie and bring it back with them, it's like you look at them funny for a while. It's like, what's your problem? Well, you not like this family anymore.
So what do you think about the Brazilian steakhouses? Like, are they better than pizza?
No. Well, here's the thing. The Brazilian steakhouses, I feel like, when you know, we're talking about like rodizio stuff where they come around, they just shave the meat in front of you. I mean, that's tremendous. But like, I feel bad. I don't know. I feel guilty saying no sometimes when they come over. Like, you know, they want to like, and I feel like just so full afterwards. I don't know. Like almost like, I don't know. I feel almost like I'm going to have a heart attack as soon as I'm done. It's like in San Francisco, I went to this dim sum place once and this Chinese lady just kept yelling at me as she pushed the cart and I didn't know what I was eating. Like, I was just, she was like just lifting lids off and yelling things at, and I was like, okay, fine, just put it there. It's fine. I'll eat that. And at the end, it was like, you know, $700. I don't know how much we spent, but it was a lot of money.
Okay, guys. So we have a different type of show today. We're not going to base it around like 15 players and our takes on all of them. Rather, it's going to be strictly on draft strategy in general. There's going to be a lot of interesting takeaways. Before we get into that, though, I want to ask you about your book series, Joe. Like, sure. When did you start writing this thing every year, and what made you decide to go for it?
Well, it might be decide to go for the book series, and this is, gosh, this is going to be the 8th year coming up here. And this is between baseball and football. Started with a couple baseball books and then transitioned into the football, too. But what started was, you know, I was writing on the side for a couple of sites and for free, as we all do, and, you know, to learn and fail and get better. And then one site was promising to pay me, and then they hosed me after a year of working for them. And I said, enough is enough. I know what I'm capable of, and I'm going to put out what's worked for me in fantasy, and I've had great success. And I put it out there on Amazon. This was when you could only do, you know, Kindle stuff, direct publishing, just Kindle only before the paperback. And I thought, wow, if I sell like 50 books, that'll be cool. You know, I ended up going to number one in fantasy sports the first year.
Amazing.
And I was like, wow, this is good. And the sales were moderate and stuff like that. But what happened was people really latched onto it and it made sense. And I think that's the thing. We live in an era where host sites just continue to put everybody on a more level playing field than ever, because everyone gets the same news, notes, stats. They get all the information. It's not like, you know, 15 years ago in fantasy where you had to like research places and if one friend knew what Roto World was when it first started and nobody didn't want to tell anybody like where they were getting these news and updates from. Mm-hmm. But now we're in a different world. So what separates you? What's unique? And relative position value is that. It is a value-based drafting system, but what's so great about it and so different is it's very easy to understand. It's very applicable to all formats, and it quantifies position scarcity. And it tells you just, you know, rankings are great. And when you have, you know, smart people like Mike and other people in the industry, you guys who are ranking players and giving you rankings, that's not enough. Like, even if you're a well-informed person, I want to quantify that. I want to know how much better DeAndre Hopkins is than the number 6 or 7 wide receiver. And then where does that fall into the negative? And basically what RPV and our relative position value does is it tells you that. It quantifies tiers and tells you how much better a player is than the next guy, and then into the negative. So it basically dictates in each spot where your draft position goes and what you should be doing. And more importantly, too, where you go into the negative. Because fantasy is about me outproducing you from as many spots as I possibly can. And if I can do that consistently, then I'm in a good spot. And it basically lays that out there for you in a very simple and applicable way.
Tegs and I are both really big numbers guys, and some of the people who come on the show, they're not as much numbers guys, and so it kind of annoys them. But I'm really big into the BBD. It's just a math game.
It is, like, but you know what? Like, I don't like math that weighs you down, and that's what RPV is simple in the sense that it's just illuminating your thoughts, and it shows you, oh, this is why I should hit running back earlier. This is why going here at this point in the draft would be a bad idea, or this is why this trade is bad for me, because even though I'm getting better here, I'm getting worse in these two spots. And it's also, I make RB1 as a position, RB2 as a position, and I do it differently.
Interesting.
And because most teams are going to have an RB1 on their team. So how much better is your RB1 than the fantasy league average in your league RB1 and all that stuff? And I think it's all about applicability and simplification of stuff.
So let me ask you this then, because Tags and I, we're both, you know, we do the late round QB thing, unless, you know, Cam Newton or Russell Wilson really slips. But Aaron Rodgers is different for me, because his VBD every single time that he's been healthy has been in the top 17 overall. And every time except once, it's been in the top 12 overall. I'm not talking just about a quarterback, obviously. So what do you say in terms of the math about Aaron Rodgers? Like, how high should you take him?
I love this question, Bobby. This is the best. And this is why I'm a late round QB and single quarterback too. Now, I'm a big super flex whore, and I think that should be always what everybody plays.
Agree.
It's the most, it's the most productive position, the most important in real football. Why aren't we valuing it the most in fantasy? I don't know, but that's a story for another time. But with the thing with Rodgers is, yeah, maybe overall he is, but what's the cost that you pay for that? And I think that's what I'm able to illuminate in the Black Book series is, yeah, he might be that overall number of that plus whatever you want to make him, but the problem is, how much better is he than the 8th quarterback one? And when you look at them and compare them to each other, that's where you get the answer to that question. And the answer to that question is, he's like a plus nine, somewhere around that range, depending on your scoring system. And you know what? That's not a huge advantage when you're talking about the rest of the crew. And nowadays, more than ever, when quarterback's been elevated because the way defenses have changed and the way, you know, offenses opened up, it's a lot easier to make up ground in quarterback. And if you pass early by taking a Rodgers on a lot of the depth at running back and wide receiver where that attrition of injuries happen, you are going to be behind, and it's going to be very difficult to make up that ground.
Tags, what do you think about this? Like, if Aaron Rodgers falls to you in the late fourth, early fifth, you're definitely scooping him up, right?
Yeah, I'm in the middle of this argument. I'm not necessarily a late round quarterback guy, but what I am okay. Is like, it's like almost like Aaron Rodgers or bust. I think Russell Wilson could be thrown in there, because the reason I say that is like in a lot of my drafts and a lot of public leagues out there, you're not going to get Aaron Rodgers in the fourth round. So it's a conversation that's kind of mute on most levels. But if you are in a league where a lot of people are trending towards the late round quarterback approach, there is a point of a breaking point for me. And when I'm looking at guys, you know, like a Josh Gordon or an Aaron Rodgers, there's a lot of risk with Josh Gordon, you know, especially right now as we're sitting here. Like, if you're looking at Devontae Parker.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you could get Golden Tate there too.
Yeah, that's the thing. It really comes down to how you want to build your team, right? If you're looking for some stability, Golden Tate's there. You know he's not going to win you a league single-handedly. That's just not going to happen. So it's like, it all comes down to roster construction for me. If I've taken some risk in the first couple rounds of some upside guys, I might go Rodgers because I know he gives me safety. But the thing is, I don't think I consider him until I think it's the early fourth round is when I feel somewhat comfortable. But again, it puts you behind the eight ball. And another thing it does...
And that's only if one of your favorite guys hasn't dropped.
Well, that's true. But then another thing it does is it puts you in a position where you're not able to take a tight end early. Because Jake Seeley and I had this conversation, because Jamie Eisenberg, we did a mock, and he was in that one, and he took both, or I think it was Jamie, I think he took both Aaron Rodgers, and he had Rob Gronkowski or something like that. So it was like this team had both the quarterback and the tight end, and we liked the value on both players where they were taken. But his wide receiver three was like DJ Moore. And it was like, I don't want to be starting DJ Moore. So you kind of have to pick your poison. So if you're going to want to take someone like Gronkowski, Kelce, or Ertz, I do not suggest reaching for an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson. Instead, wait, because I feel like the gap between Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson and then the rest of the field, like, you know, even Cam Newton, he's got some upside, but he's wildly inconsistent. Yeah. So like the field from QB 3 to QB 10, I could flip flop a lot of those guys in there. So if I miss out on Rodgers or maybe Russell Wilson in the sixth or seventh round, then I'm going to wait and I'll probably snag a quarterback in like the 10th through the 13th round.
You know, I'm okay with going quarterback and tight end early because it's just the best value, period.
Yeah.
And if those guys are there, you know, if you get Gronk in round three, Aaron Rodgers in early round five or something like that, I'm okay with that. The rest of your team, you'll figure it out. I just think Jamie probably screwed that up going with DJ Moore as his third wide receiver. He could have done it differently. But, you know, this is a really interesting conversation, and I think that some of the advantages you have in taking a quarterback or a tight end early is that you don't ever have to stream. You don't have to waste your fab on that. You don't have to have a second quarterback, a second tight end on your roster. Aaron Rodgers, you play him every week, even if it's against Jacksonville. And I understand that you're missing out on some running back depth. You're missing out on the high-end running backs before it gets too late, but it's also plus 100 points every year.
I'll tell you where I make the quarterback exception for Aaron Rodgers, too, is the more shallow league, which people might say, well, why would you do that?
Interesting.
And the reason why you do that is because it's easier to make up ground at wide receiver in the shallow league, because this
great
wide
point.
Receiver pool
okay.
is much closer together. And this is another thing that RPV will show you. When you get past the wide receiver ones into that lower wide receiver one, all the way into high-end wide receiver three category, the compression there, all that's separating them is mere percentage points.
Yeah.
It's less than double digits between the very top and then the last of that group of maybe 20. And that is very telling, which means that if you're able to utilize matchups properly, and this comes from playing more DFS over the years too, and if you can pick and choose a little bit, you're better off going with an Aaron Rodgers in a 10-team league. You can make up that ground. And with tight end, it's that same thing too. Yeah, Gronk is great, right, when Gronk is healthy and playing. But there's only one team in your league that's going to have that Gronk advantage. So outside of that, when you remove him from this field, all of a sudden, that tight end position compresses quite a bit. And when you do that, you have to realize, okay, well, I only have to worry about playing the Gronk team one time, two times, whatever many times it is, depending on the teams and the schedule, right? But the rest of that is, what do I need to do? Well, I need to figure out a tight end one every week. Well, yeah, you could stream and whatnot, but if you're looking for guys who have touchdown upside, if you're looking for the Kyle Rudolphs potentially with Cousins and whatnot, you know, give me 30 yards, three catches, and a touchdown. All of a sudden, you got a tight end one for the week, and that's something you can figure out and still keep pace. Whereas in the quarterbacks in the 12-team league, you know, it's like I can have Matt Stafford put up 303 touchdowns.
Yeah, you're definitely right about that. All right, guys, we're going to get into zero running backs, which is a strategy that some people started employing a couple years ago. We're going to talk about whether or not it makes sense. But first, I want to talk about the sponsor of today's show, PristineAuction.com. Pristine Auction has daily auctions, like hundreds of items that end every single night. There's something perfect for a fan of every team. Everything is authentic from only the most trusted sources. Seriously, you aren't going to believe just how affordable some of these items are. Just listen to a few of the awesome football pieces that I saw last night, okay? A signed Saquon Barkley jersey, $100 even. A signed O.J. Simpson 1968 Sports Illustrated magazine, like when he was first, you know, awesome, $33. You've got a signed Aaron Donald jersey, $79. These things are awesome to hang on your wall. Like I said, there's something for everyone. I see something every day that makes me really tempted to jump in there, and sometimes I absolutely do. Tex, have you bought anything from them lately? I know you're always looking.
Well, my birthday is coming up, and my wife was asking me about that, and it stinks because, like, I don't know what it is, but apparently a lot of other people have Amari Cooper support, and a lot of people are still buying his stuff. Because, as you know, I've been trying to collect helmets, and they're just getting... I don't know if we're just giving too many people the website, and they're just going there and bidding against me. I have no idea, but I'm not getting Amari Cooper as cheap as I thought I would. But I actually have to figure out what I want to do. Do I get two helmets, or do I get a new golf club? So I'm trying to figure out what I want to do. My wife kind of gave me the option on what I want to do, and I'm leaning towards the helmets just because they're going to be with me all year. Golf is only there for a couple months when I have time.
Bobby, you sound like the devil on the shoulder there. Do it. Do both. Shh, don't tell anyone. She'll never find out.
Pristine Auction is quick and free to register, free to bid. You only pay when you win. When you go to Pristine Auction, please make sure that let them know Fantasy Pro sent you. That way we can keep doing these giveaways. And right now we're doing a signed Keenan Allen powder blue jersey giveaway. That ends this weekend, so make sure to get your entries in. Go to fantasypros.com/contest. You can see the details there. It takes like 30 seconds to enter. Go to fantasypros.com/contest. And Pristine Auction, by the way, is spelled PristineE. All right, guys, let's talk zero running backs. And Tex, can you explain what zero running backs is?
So it's basically a strategy that someone employed. Basically, it was based on the fragility of the position as a whole, like about running backs going down, you being able to grab players off the waiver wire, grab a bunch of handcuffs, grab a bunch of, you know, PPR guys that you could just stick on your roster enough to get points. You're talking about guys like Duke Johnson, like Theo Riddick, maybe like Tariq Cohen this year. TJ Yeldon. These are guys that fall.
All those guys are owned now, though. I own 8 running backs on most of my teams. Like, you're not getting those on the waiver wire.
Well, that's the thing. You're not getting those on the waiver. Those are the ones that you're going to draft to be your starters. Like, that's okay. So if you're employing a zero running back strategy, or you're going to try and reach for someone like Marlon Mack because, you know, he has the potential to win that starting job. But in the end, when you say zero running back, like a true zero running back team doesn't draft a running back for, in my opinion,
until the sixth, seventh round.
I was about to say for at least the first five or six rounds, they don't have a running back on the roster, and then they start adding some after that.
Yeah.
My issue with the strategy is similar to the late quarterback strategy. So I understand the appeal to those who say, I'm going to stream quarterbacks and I'm going to have a better quarterback than you at the end of the year if we add up all of our points. And I understand that strategy, but there's a problem with that. Is that if you're playing in a league of competent individuals and they know who your targets are on the waiver wire, they might grab that player in front of you just to block you. Or, I mean, I like Fab, free agent acquisition by budget, but in most public leagues, like, we have to speak to the general public here, there are more than 12 quarterbacks being drafted. Like, I know in our analyst
leagues, like 20.
That's what I'm saying. In our analyst leagues, yeah. Only 12 quarterbacks are taken because nobody takes a backup quarterback because everybody knows the value of them.
But yeah, have fun screaming Tannehill, right?
That's what it comes down to. Is if your league, if you know that you're in your home league, your team, you're, like, it's a 12-team league, and you have guys that draft two quarterbacks. Let's say that 8 or 10 teams do. You're going to be staring at Joe Flacco, Ryan Tannehill, guys like that streaming every week, and it's not going to give you a great situation to play from. So you have to know your league, and then when it comes to the running back, you're almost relying on getting those running backs off the waiver wire. You know, you have, and you're fighting everybody, and everybody knows who you're going to get. Because as Joe said, information is so readily accessible nowadays that there are no such thing as just like you being ahead of the curve and you know who that backup running back is that nobody knows. You know what I mean?
So, like Alfred Morris back in the day. Alfred Morris was the secret for like 15% of the population. And everyone was like, why are you drafting that bum? Then he went for 1,600 yards. That does not happen anymore.
Exactly. So it's just, it's different. And I think that's why you and I aren't, we're not fans of strategies as a whole. If value presents itself, and that's why I like Joe's strategy, like the talk here with Joe, is that he's saying like you're it's almost like a value-based drafting system where if value presents itself, that's fine, because if you're getting the points at wide receiver, like if you're choosing between, you know, the number 15 running back and the number 3 wide receiver, I'm going to tell you to go wide receiver even if you already have 2 wide receivers on your team, just because the value is just so much better. So
yeah,
Joe, are you with us in the fact that you don't play to any certain strategy as a whole?
Well, I'll address the zero RB thing first, and maybe that answers the question at the same time. I thought this was the dumbest thing ever created, and I railed against it a couple years ago because why are diamonds valuable? Because there's less of them. They don't become less valuable because there's less of them. They become more valuable. And I understand it was a transition where some of the running backs had been aging out, and there was Ezekiel Elliott was coming to the league and Todd Gurley. It was this weird in between where people were afraid of what that position was going to look like. But what's the one thing on a weekly basis that you can really count on more than anything? And that's attempts usually from bell cow running backs. So if you're telling me every week you want a floor of points, well, the best way to do it is have a running back who doesn't have any competition, who is going to be the guy, and more importantly, someone who can catch the ball to the backfield as well. Now, you build your team around those kind of guys, you take out the question marks, and again, this comes to that other thing of relative position value and building the strategy off that is, if you can get a high-end RB1 and then a low-end RB1 or high-end RB2, you are better at RB1 significantly, as a position of productivity, and then you're better at RB2 as a position of productivity. You have an advantage now over everybody else in your league at that position. You can continue to build. So every time you take another running back, even if they're okay, well, guess what? Now they're your third or they're your flex or your bye week running back. And you're consistently going to be in a better position to outscore somebody else more than ever. And, you know, I hated the zero running back thing because I thought it was short-sighted and I thought it was an overreaction to what is just cyclical. And I thought it was also kind of this idea where that big wide receiver class, people were buying too much into the Odell Beckham, Mike Evans, oh my God, everybody's great when they come out of college to catch the ball.
Yep.
And that's not necessarily something you can rely on either. So you've seen a big correction between Elliott and now Gurley and obviously to this year with Saquon Barkley being a very comfortable mid-first selection for most people. I think that's the thing. So my strategy is very simple. No matter what the format, PPR standard doesn't matter. Give me the bell cow running backs early and often, and I will build off of that. And even in Fishbowl, I mean, I was the 8th pick, and Hopkins somehow made it to me around the corner, and I took him in the 2nd because it was just too big of a player to pass on. I don't know how I got that lucky, but I did. And then as soon as I came back around, I took Howard as the 3rd because you know what? Maybe Howard still has some question marks, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be the guy. And if Nagy can make him anything close to what he made Hunt last year, especially towards the last 6 games of the season, sign me up, man.
Yeah. I don't like the zero running back strategy. Now, if you do it, I think that you have to do it a different way than most people are implying, where it's just the pass catching running backs or whatever. What I'm doing, if I've done this one time just to see what it looks like, mostly so I could talk about it on the podcast, right? You go Jamal Williams because you know he's going to get carries in the first 2 weeks, and then it's a long-term game from there. Yeah, I got Duke Johnson as well, but it's a long-term game. You get 6 high upside running backs, guys like Kenneth Dixon, Jordan Wilkins, Aaron Jones, guys who could be starting running backs, and if they were, could be top 15 running backs. And if you get 6 of those guys and you hit on 2 of them and you pair them with Duke Johnson, you've got really good running backs and you hardly spent any equity on them. That's the only way to do it in my mind. You can't just completely punt the position. It has to be, I've got a big lottery ticket here. And if I hit, I've got the best tight end, the best quarterback, the best wide receivers. And now I've got competent running backs as well. If you're not going for the high upside guys and like 6 of them, then you have no chance of having the competent running backs. With that said, I'm never going to do the zero running back strategy. When I go into a draft, here's my plan. First 4 rounds, I go with value no matter what it is. I don't care if it's a wide receiver, quarterback, tight end. I don't care if it's, you know, 4 wide receivers, because then you can stick one in the flex. After that, though, I'm filling out my team with my needs. I'm drafting for a running back. If that means I'm reaching a little bit on Marshawn Lynch, that's fine. But the first four rounds, that's the biggest separation in value from pick to pick. And so I'm going all value there. I'll figure out the rest later. That does not mean I'm skipping out on running back in rounds 5 and 6 too, though.
No, no, absolutely. And so the thing is, Bobby, it's funny because, Joe, I'm sure you get this too, is that we said on the podcast, it was not long ago, where we started talking about not liking zero running back. And someone tweeted at me saying, oh, it would have been nice if somebody would have jumped out and actually said this before it failed. And I was like, guys, I don't know where you were at. I don't know if you didn't follow me then. But
well, I put mine in writing, Mike. See, that's the nice thing.
That was back when I was back with PFF at this time, and I wrote an article that saying zero wide receiver was actually more viable of a strategy.
100%.
That you could find wide receivers later in the draft, and you can pile them together and figure it out more than you could with running
back. Or pick and choose matchups with them.
Exactly.
And basically, you don't think of it as a position, not as a player. And that's the thing. People do this far too often, Mike. And I don't know, Bobby, if you agree with this too. I believe, and this is my theory in the Black Book, is that more than a player's talent necessarily, it's the format you play in that dictates the value.
Mm-hmm.
And PPR, people say, oh, the wide receiver becomes more valuable. Like, no, all the wide receivers become more valuable, which means it's easier to supplement and play matchups and figure out how to maximize that roster spot that week as much as you can. Whereas, you know, if you pass on running backs, it makes it more difficult. You have to hit on other guys. You have to hope that Jay Ajayi is a guy that clicks. You have to hope that Ronald Jones can be the guy that some of us believe he has the potential to be. But the difference is that you have to have that hit. Whereas I know what Lev Bell is. I know what, you know, Todd Gurley is. I have a pretty good idea, even what Melvin Gordon is to a lesser extent, a guy that I think doesn't get nearly enough credit, who last couple of years just keep putting up stats. And that's the thing, man. I just don't understand why people are so comfortable with leaving so much to risk, whereas they can build off and then take risks later on. If they pay off, they're just bonuses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk about zero wide receiver then. Is that the same kind of thing, Tags, where you don't draft a wide receiver until like round 7? Can you go even deeper than that? And if so, like, what would your wide receivers ideally look like in this strategy?
Yeah, well, it's really tough to go by that. I mean, nowadays, like, the thing is so the way I've been seeing drafts going, it's almost like it's become almost too predictable in the way the drafts go. You're going to have 15 running backs come off the board by the early third round. Like, that's happening. And then you're going to see this massive run at wide receiver. You're going to see guys like, you know, Amari Cooper coming off the board. You're going to see guys like Stephon Diggs, Allen Robinson is now in that conversation, Demaryius Thomas. So it's like drafts are going so predictable this year. I think it's once you get outside the top 6 rounds is where things get a little interesting. And you might be able to steal some values, like Sammy Watkins will sometimes fall into that territory. I think that he's being drafted really low. Devontae Parker, I've said before, he's being drafted right now as the wide receiver 38. He's slowly coming up draft boards, which he should. You know, chasing those targets. It's like Joe talked about with running backs with carries. Chase those carries, chase the targets for wide receivers. Devontae Parker is being drafted as floor in terms of the targets he's going to get. You could look at guys like Rishard Matthews, who might be the number one receiver. I know people are expecting Corey Davis to break out, but it's very possible that Rishard Matthews is still the leading receiver there. You could look at guys like Kenny Stills, who, again, I've talked about in this show, is that Kenny Stills is traditionally underrated. He's not a sexy pick. He's not a guy that's going to win you your fantasy league.
Can you play him every week, though?
I mean, if you go through and look at his stat log, ideally you would not. However, the wide receivers that you do want to play every week, they're not being drafted where Kenny Stills is. Like once you get outside the top, I would say the top 28, 29 receivers, then from there, you're kind of going to play matchups with the next 20 guys. Like you can, like you're, there's going to be weeks where you're going to be like, okay, I'm going to play Calvin Ridley because Julio Jones is going to be shadowed by maybe Marshawn Lattimore. Maybe you're worried about that. I don't know. But maybe Jalen Ramsey's up against him, and you have a slot receiver that you can play. You can play Mohamed Sanu because he's going to be playing in the slot. And you kind of play the matchups beyond that, because I think once you get past like the Michael Crabtree and like that tier, I think everybody kind of looks similar, where it's like,
agreed.
I don't think Devin Funchess is an every week starter. I don't think that like Pierre Garçon, I don't think I want to use him every single week. Emmanuel Sanders. Like, there's a lot of guys that kind of fall into that territory. But Joe definitely hit it on the head with the positional scarcity, like in terms of knowing your scoring. And PPR leagues, he mentioned it, every single wide receiver gets more valuable. Sure, there's some who are more, you know, slot heavy than usual. But running backs, you are not going to find a 3-down running back that late in the draft.
So let me ask you this, Tags, okay? You load up, you get 3 of the top running backs, guys that you know are starters, they're going to get a bunch of touches. You get yourself a quarterback, let's say you get Aaron Rodgers, and then you go and get, let's just say Delanie Walker, so you're safe at tight end. After that, your wide receivers, Sammy Watkins, Jamison Crowder, Devontae Parker, and let's toss in Dez Bryant there too. He's going to sign, I think he's a solid wide receiver, number 4 at this point. Do you not love your team?
I mean, I'm pretty happy with it. Ideally, I mean, on all my teams, like what I was taught a long time ago when I started playing fantasy, and it's something that's always stuck in my mind, is get as many elite players on your team as possible at each position. And I know it sounds very stupid to put it that way. but the thing is like when you look at your team, like when you look at the opposing team that you're about to play for that week, you get scared when they have someone like Aaron Rodgers, like Le'Veon Bell, like Rob Gronkowski, you know, like Julio Jones or Antonio Brown. Those are the players that you're like, damn, like that's the guy that I don't want to play this week. Now, granted, the rest of their team can suck, but if you're able to snag elite level players at positions, ideally I do that. And I want at least one top guy at each position. And that's why, like, when it usually comes down to me not liking strategy, it's because I'll take value and it's never going to fall to the point where I'm going to draft four running backs. Like, that's just never going to happen to start a draft because there's just too much value at wide receiver, especially in that second, third round. But if the value's there, I mean, if people are taking wide receivers, I'll go running back heavy because someone's going to trade me for one of them. But okay. I don't know if I love it. If I was like in a PPR, I don't think I'd love having Sammy Watkins as my number one receiver. But I think that strategy.
Well, if you flip the quarterback and Delanie Walker and you wait on those two and you start going exactly. wide receiver right away, then you've really got a spot because then what's your quarterback going to be? Phillip Rivers?
Right.
It's going to be Stafford. It's going to be one of those guys. And you mm-hmm. love that team if yes. you invert it.
Well, if it's full PPR, then Jameson Crowder, you're number one.
I love Crowder. His upside is like top 20 PPR. Like that's as high
no,
as I'm going.
No, I disagree big time, man.
That's fine. But I like Crowder. I do.
Are you an anti-Alex Smith guy, Bobby? Is that why?
I'm a huge Alex Smith guy. I've got Alex Smith in my top eight.
Yeah, Bobby's...
So a decade of mediocrity is not enough for you?
I mean, he was an MVP candidate last year. He was
one year? That's 1 year! It's 1 year! I had hair, too, once upon a time, but I haven't in 10 years. So I just want to put that out there. You know, the 1 year I had hair.
Oh, my God. Oh, okay. So I'm going to I'll jump in on Bobby's side here and say that. So hold on. So I had hair once upon a time, too. I still have a little bit, but not much. All right. So
you guys are making me nervous. Am I going to lose my hair?
In regards to Alex Smith, Joe, right. I actually like was one who jumped all over him over like the last 5 years. People told me that he was at least competent. And I was like, no, this guy's a game manager. How is he any different than Kyle Orton? And I went through everything, but this, like, I kid you not, this year I watched every Alex Smith game and I came away super impressed. Like I don't know if it was.
Oh, I watched. Yeah. But I hear you.
Here's the issue though. If you look at the teams he's played for, you go to the 49ers, elite defense when he was there, like elite, yep. top notch. They didn't have, mm-hmm. you go over to Kansas
City.
The peak
DeVarro Bowman years and all those guys, absolutely. Yes. Alden Smith, absolutely.
And then you go to the Chiefs, and he played with an elite defense there for a long time. This last year was the first year we started seeing them take a step back, and I think that more was asked of Alex Smith.
That's fair.
So, like, looking at it and looking at, you know, what Kirk Cousins, Robert Griffin III even, like, has done under Jay Gruden, I think he's going to open it up a little bit. And I think Alex Smith might surprise some people. I think that, you know, like when you talk about him being a game manager, I was like, if someone were to go on my timeline, they'd be like, Mike, you used to hate Alex Smith. Like, you could look back 2 years of my tweets and you'll find something negative about Alex Smith, I'm sure. But you'll hear me defending the crap out of him because I watched him play last year. He deserved to be in the MVP
conversation.
Well,
what makes you a good analyst is your ability to have an opinion that's informed. Adjust, yeah. And then say, give credit where credit is due. And I think that's totally fair. I just look at a career of 3,500 yards or right. less and the cumulatives. And that's a tough one. That last year was the first time in a decade that he hit 4,000.
That's a long years. Time.
That's a lot of mediocrity.
Mm-hmm. You know? I was talking about how, like, Tom Brady was a game manager until they opened him up. But that happened a lot earlier in his career than Alex Smith.
For sure.
I mean, have we seen other examples of somebody being so mediocre for a dozen years and then suddenly becoming... I mean, I don't say this lightly, but really,
it's rare.
Alex Smith was a star last year.
I mean, well,
so I don't know what to expect. Like, I could definitely see him, you know, going back to his normal self. But
would anybody have considered? So good. Would anybody have considered Kurt Warner a stud in his early years?
What?
Kurt Warner in his early years?
Yeah, man.
Well,
he was
right
the
out of
greatest.
The gate, he was huge.
Well,
but he
was the best quarterback in the NFL as a rookie.
No, but,
right?
But in all fairness, he was surrounded by Marshall Faulk. And he was surrounded by Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce. He was surrounded by Hall of Fame talent there.
But then there was a lull in production there. Maybe I shouldn't have said start the career. I was just thinking more of the way he had that
second
lull
run
in
of
production,
his career.
And then how he finished it. You know, like he finished it strong. Maybe I was wrong in saying that. But hey, guys, we have breaking news, by the way. Bobby, this is just for you. I shouldn't say it's breaking news, but it's just for you. Dirk Cutter was just interviewed. He will not commit to Jameis Winston starting in week 4 when he returns from his suspension.
What?
Yep. Oh, that's just dumb. Like that. Come on. I think that's just coach speak sending him a message. Maybe. How good was Jameson Winston in December? Hey kid, you know, your job's not here when you get back, so get it together. And you know what? It's 2 years too late. So screw you, Dirk Cotter. I mean, come on. You know.
I mean, maybe he's like getting really fat or something.
He might not
like,
be the
well,
coach.
I'm not playing the first 3 weeks, so I'm just gonna eat a bunch of lobster.
Hey, Sonny Jurgensen was fat too, and he threw the ball pretty good. So, but yeah. Look how good Winston was in December.
He was so good. He was the best fantasy quarterback over the last 4 weeks.
I had an argument with somebody on the internet about this. They were bashing Winston. I was like, well, they wanted to put him in a ranking or whatever it is. I'm like, well, did you see how he finished the season? And he missed games in the middle there. I was like, did you see December? Like, well, whatever. I was like, not a couple. Go look. I think it was, like three of his last five games were 300-yard games, and he had, like, 1,500 yards in the month of December.
He was amazing.
He was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, come on, man. Seriously.
Yeah. If Jameis Winston hadn't been suspended, the reason Tags brought that up is because I had him in every best ball league. He was my quarterback. I was getting him every single league, no matter what. Just forget it. Don't even consider Alex Smith. There's no chance I'm taking Aaron Rodgers if he falls to the fifth or sixth because I'm getting Jameis Winston in the 12th round. So, kind of sucks now.
It does. One thing I want to point out, too, for you with Alex Smith is that Nagy effect of when he took over the play calling last year, too, his stats also just ballooned towards the end, too, with the 366 and the 268. You look at the game log, you had a 300-yard game week 15, too. And just putting that out there, I'm
that's scary.
Cautiously optimistic that Gruden can do those kinds of things. But, you know, Kelsey's a better talent than Jordan Reed, who's not always or ever on the field. And, you know, I mean, Tyreek Hill doesn't get enough credit how explosive and dangerous of a player he is. And I know some why people don't like him, and I get that. But I don't know, man. Kareem Hunt's a very good player, and I like Geis and all. I just think there's a lot of variables. Everything clicked last year. And this is why I'm higher on Howard than I am on a guy like Smith, because I want the offensive mind. Just like last year, I took a lot. You know how much heat I took? 2017, I went in a big, bold prediction. I said Todd Gurley is going to be fantasy MVP, and people mocked me publicly. They came after me, and I was like, okay, we'll see in the end how that figures out, because you have to put your stock into the offensive mind that's calling plays. Mm-hmm. Jeff Fisher is not a mind nor an offensive mind. And when you put that together, all of a sudden what happened? All of a sudden amazing things happen. And I think the same thing is possible with the Bears eventually too. They could be one of these sneaky second half offenses that really catch up. But it's a fun debate, that's for sure.
But do you
let me add in one more thing before this debate ends. Alex Smith has never thrown more than 510 passes in his career. Like Tag said, because of the defense and they just never let him. He's been so good. What if they let him throw the ball 550 times?
Like
570 times?
No, that's my point. That's my point. I'm not, hold on a second. I'm on record right now and they're like, come at me. So it's saying that I do not believe that Alex Smith is he may not even be a downgrade at all to Kirk Cousins. And I think Kirk Cousins got a massive contract. And Jay Gruden, as I mentioned, if you guys remember Robert Griffin III, he was better than Andrew Luck in their rookie years. Like, he played phenomenal there in that offense. Now, granted, there's been some great minds. You know, when we talk about the Andy Reid coaching tree, nobody talks about Jay Gruden. You know, to see Kyle Shanahan come out of there, to see Sean McVay come out of there. There's something to be said about this. And the offense, so the defense with the Redskins, their secondary is not going to stop anybody. Like, Josh Norman was good. It's not that he's bad anymore, but their cornerback depth behind him is zilch. They have nothing.
No, you're right. There will be moments where they play from behind, Mike.
So
I definitely agree with that.
I just think that Alex Smith is a better athlete than Kirk Cousins. I think he showed last year that he can throw the deep ball if you ask him to. And I just, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think that Kirk Cousins might be a little bit
plus
overrated.
All the rushing
that's
yards.
All
he's
going to
get 300, 400 rushing yards, three, four touchdowns, too.
Do you guys put any stock in the money crunch with him a little bit? Like, you know, the pressure of the big contract?
On Cousins?
I don't know. I don't think I really buy
into
that stuff.
Smith. Oh, on Smith?
On the ridiculous amount of money that Alex Smith
full
is
guaranteed
getting.
Deal that
at 34 years old.
I was like, I don't think he's pressured at all. He could kind of just sit on his butt and he's fully guaranteed all of it.
Well, ding, ding, ding. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So, guys, let's switch the conversation here and go to late round quarterbacks, okay? This is the big new strategy that everyone's doing. It makes a lot of sense. Sometimes I think it may have gone too far, but if you're going late round quarterback, Joe, are you going for a Big Ben type, someone who you can get in the 10th, 11th round and he could still be awesome? Are you going for a high upside guy like Pat Mahomes, and if he doesn't cut it, you just cut him? Or are you going for a streamer, maybe Andy Dalton in the very last round, He's got a great matchup in week one, and then you just go to the next streamer after that.
I don't care for the streaming options, although I do think there are some, like I think with a full season of Elliott, when you look at Elliott's, Prescott's numbers with Elliott, without Elliott last year, it was pretty clear what kind of quarterback he can be. And
yeah.
I think Eli Manning all of a sudden with all these weapons could
mm-hmm.
very easily get back into the high-end QB2 conversation without a doubt. For me, I like the salty veterans. I'm president of the Philip Rivers fan club. To me, it's just give me that 4,000 yards and 28 touchdowns every year. Yeah. Stafford, those are the kind of quarterbacks I like to roll it. So Roethlisberger okay. fits in that as well. My hesitancy with Roethlisberger last few years up until last year was the stark home road splits, man. I mean, Sealy and I talk about that all the time. And, you know, we were doing On Target together, you know, he's worse than me about it. But last year he corrected it a bit. We had an argument about it on Tuesday on his show, but he did correct it. So I'm a little bit more comfortable taking him. But yeah, I go that proven, solid, pass first offense quarterback too. Let's go with that too, because those guys that run, yeah, they're sexy sometimes, but you know what? They also get hurt because they're running around mm-hmm. and they take more shots. So keep that yeah. in mind too.
Tags, if we hear that Lamar Jackson is starting,
he's not.
Do you draft him as a late round quarterback? Because he has huge upside as
he's
a running
back. He's not. I saw this conversation the other day. I think I agree. Maybe it was Sigmund Bloom that brought it up. I can't remember. But basically asking if Lamar Jackson was the starter and you knew he was going to start all 16 games, where would you draft him? And honestly, I mean, I put him down in the Patrick Mahomes territory because I feel like there's upside there, but I also feel like there's some downside. I think this is a bad conversation just because there's no chance that he starts. There's legitimately zero.
I agree.
Like none.
Yeah.
Marty Morningwig doesn't know how to use him. They actually, I think news came out this morning. One of the beat writers said, this is still Joe Flacco's team. Like, don't get it twisted. And
you know, I brought it up because I've got the question 1,000 times.
No, I know.
And, like, rather than respond to all of them, I can just say it once on the podcast.
It's like, you know, it's just because the guy's got a ton of talent doesn't mean he's ready to start in the NFL either, you know?
Yeah. Especially when you've got Joe Flacco, who has thrown the ball 600 times, and he's not great, but, like, you know what you're going to get. He can take your team, not take your team. He can be there as your team goes to the playoffs and not completely
I love Crabtree there. I think that's a great fit.
Interesting. I haven't heard... Why don't you talk about Crabtree then? Because I don't think we've talked about Crabtree once.
Well, it's funny because if you go back and look at the last 3 years of Crabtree, what do you see? You see a fair amount of consistency. Now, I know last year everything kind of went in the crapper, but that whole team went in the crapper. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to hang that on Crabtree. But if you go through and you look at, okay, what do I want out of a wide receiver? And what I want is consistency, right? He's like the anti-Amari Cooper, you know, where all of Amari Cooper's stats came in one or two games, right?
Mm-hmm.
All his stats come on a weekly basis. It's like that 1 year Eric Decker had 12 points every single week.
Yeah, it was
ridiculous. It's not enough to know what the guy's average is. It's you got to know and look week to week, how many times is he hitting that average? That's what you need to do. That's why a guy like Julio, as much as he's terrific, I think Julio is a better best ball guy than he is a week-to-week fantasy guy at times because of the huge games and the quiet games. Same with A.J. Green. Whereas a guy like Crabtree, you're telling me he's going to be around, you know, 900, 1,000 yards. He's going to have around 8 touchdowns, and he's going to do this 80-catch, 85-ball thing consistently on a weekly basis. That's an incredible mark. And, I mean, he created something there in Oakland in 15 and 16, where he was really consistent. And I think going with Flacco, I think he's the perfect kind of receiver for the kind of offense that they're going to run. And I think he's going to get back to being that player he was in 15 and 16, and he's still only 31.
That makes sense. I mean, I don't mind drafting Michael Crabtree. I just don't think I have any shares because he's going to the same spot as Jamison Crowder.
And that's fair.
And I love Jamison Crowder.
And you know what? I've been such an apologist for Jamison Crowder the last 2 years. Well, I was ahead of the curve there, and then I took a lot of slack for it last year when I kept saying, no, he'll turn it around. No, it'll be fine. No, go. What, he got dropped? No, go pick him up. It's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And here's the thing about Crowder is he creates separation.
He
and
does.
Credit to Tags for bringing this up, but Alex Smith only throws when a wide receiver has separation. He's one of the best in the league, and they don't have anyone else who's any good at it.
He was never really healthy all year either, too. Crowder was dealing
with it. Yeah, at the start of the year, we talked about this so much in the podcast. I was like, I know they're not listing any injuries, but I was like, I'm telling you, I've been watching. He just doesn't look like the same player. And like you saw as the year went on, he got better and better. And then obviously Chris Thompson going down at the end of the year for the final 6 weeks, that ballooned his numbers to bigger than what they should have been, because I do anticipate Thompson coming back to that receiving role. But yeah, I think we all like Crowder here. I just, when Bobby starts saying that he could finish better than wide receiver 20, that's...
In PPR?
Okay. Again, it bumps him up. He's better in PPR formats. I think I have him as like the wide receiver 28 in PPR formats. So
you're drafting him near what you think his ceiling is?
No. Well, his ceiling, I said, is wide receiver 20. but I think he's one of the safer players. I think
close,
he's
man. There's not much difference between 20 and 28.
This is my kind of room. Let me tell you.
But the thing is, there's safety there though. That's the thing is like he's a safe pick. And you don't have to take him as the wide receiver 28 off the board. Like, I think he's going as, like, the wide receiver 36 or something like that. So I don't need to take him as the 28.
I'll say this, Bobby. I think in industry leagues, you'll see people hotter on Crowder than you will. Like you mentioned before, and I think it's a great point you made, Bobby, about, you know, you have to do these shows for the masses. I think the masses of people who aren't, you know, who are playing in leagues aren't going to be hot on Crowder this year after last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing you have to understand. Like, if you go look at the generic ESPN rankings, and this is the only thing, too, I'm always big on, too. Whatever host site you're playing on, if it's Fantrax, if it's ESPN, Yahoo, go look at their rankings and see how they're undervaluing certain players that they shouldn't be. And use that to your advantage, because most of the herd will always go and get influenced by that. And if you can wait that extra round for that player every time or close to it a few times in a draft, that's a big difference maker.
Yeah. And to your point, ECR, which is expert consensus rankings, we've got 60 experts rankings all combined together. Jamison Crowder is number 86 overall.
Yeah.
Okay. His ADP is number 98 overall. So you're exactly right. The experts like Jamison Crowder a lot better than the general public. And that should tell you a lot.
But yeah, Joe, hitting on your point, CBS is the one website that I can tell you can be exploited in terms of...
Oh, sure, because you can make your own there.
In terms of price, yeah. Like, theirs are all over the place.
I do it in baseball all the time.
Yeah, like, I've done some mock drafts in there this year, and I just look at it, and I'm like, wow, some of the players aren't even listed that should be drafted in, like, the 10th round. So you 100%. Have to, like, search for them. So it could be exploited there. But Jamison Crowder, as of right now, in positional ADP, he's being taken in PPR formats, mind you. He's being taken as the 37th wide receiver. So that's why, like, I don't need to draft him in front of guys like Corey Davis in a PPR. But the thing is, like, I can get him around later. If I wanted both of them, I can grab him.
Mm-hmm. All right, Tex, let's go back to what you think about streaming quarterbacks. If you're going, I'm not streaming quarterbacks, late round quarterbacks. Are you going streamer? Are you going the high upside guy? Are you going the safe, salty veteran?
It all depends on the league size. So if you're playing in a league that you have 16 plus roster spots, I'm okay. I'm snagging two quarterbacks. I would take one with upside, and it depends. Again, it depends on where they're being drafted, because I prefer Trubisky over Mahomes just because of draft cost. I can get Trubisky for free. Some leagues, Mahomes is going in the top 12 quarterbacks. Like, I'm not drafting him as that. But I prefer to grab one of those guys and pair him with a safe quarterback like an Alex Smith, like a Matthew Stafford, like a Phillip Rivers. You can get these guys outside the top 12 quarterbacks, and so you're not spending any equity. And a lot of times the wide receivers that I want late in the draft, I can actually pick my quarterbacks and get them two rounds later because I know I'd be reaching to grab them and I don't need to. So, but if you play in a league where it's like 15 roster spots, you only have like five bench spots, no, don't take a backup quarterback. I would rather stream at that point, and because nobody's going to have backup quarterbacks on their bench. So at that point, snag Andy Dalton in your draft with your final pick, play him against the Browns, figure it out from there.
Yeah. All right. Same
the
question
Colts,
for
the Colts,
streaming
the Colts,
quarterbacks.
I'm sorry.
Then,
they play
Joe.
The Colts week one, not the Browns, the Colts.
Oh,
Colts
are still bad. Yeah. Just generally speaking, just streaming against the Browns. Well, Browns defense is a little bit better than Carter for last
for
year,
sure.
too. I was running on that bandwagon, too.
If They've DeSean been Kizer, so bad against tight end, though.
You know, but you know what? But part of that is because DeSean Kizer keeps turning the ball over, and they were in the red zone already by the time he turned the ball over. And there's only so much you could do sometimes, and they were constantly put in bad positions by Kizer's turnovers, and they were just on the field so much that I think the linebacker core, too, who would normally cover that, they were just exhausted.
Yeah. You know what I think is going to happen? Is they're going to go from turning the ball over so much to Tyrod Taylor, and Browns fans are going to love him so much that they don't even want Baker Mayfield.
Oh, I don't stop. Know. No. So in regards to Lamar Jackson, by the way, if you're a fan of Lamar Jackson, if you're a fan of Baker Mayfield like I am, root that they don't start for as long as possible. And I mean that. Agreed. Like, I didn't want Trubisky to start for the Bears last year. I know some people say that experience is this and that, but there can be some bad traits that are passed on. They could be thrown into the fire too early, and it could ruin their confidence.
He hardly started. He threw like 8 passes in a game.
Yeah, but towards the end, he started to throw more.
Yeah, yeah.
There was that one game where he threw 9, and we were all like, oh, my God.
What happened? No, but seriously, it I'm okay. I'm a big Baker Mayfield fan. I'm okay with Tyrod Taylor. I hope that Tyrod starts every game under Hugh Jackson. And when Hugh Jackson's fired, then we have the conversation of bringing Baker.
Yeah.
I love the way you pointed that. When Hugh Jackson's fired, that was terrific.
Hey guys, let's talk about streaming tight ends now. Same kind of question. Like, are you going for a high upside guy? Maybe a George Kittle? I mean, a lot of people have him in the top tight ends, but are you going for the high upside guy, or are you going for, you know, just a week one guy, and then you'll turn your attention, Joe?
For me, it's all about the value on the board at tight end. I am not somebody who wants to pay the premium price. I don't want to be that Gronk team. As great as Gronk is, the injury quotient variable there is way too
50-50
high.
50-50 chance your season's over right, if you exactly. waste your second round pick.
And that's the thing. And where should Gronk go? Probably somewhere in the mid to late third, but he's never going to go there. It's just never going to happen. The value in the draft is never going to appropriate correctly towards Rob Gronkowski. Ertz, as good as he was last year, I think, you know, it's funny. Everybody wanted Zach Ertz to happen, right? Well, Zach Ertz. And then finally, after 3 years of wanting Zach Ertz to happen, he happened. And he got his 800 yards and he got his, you know, 8 touchdowns, which is double the amount he ever had. And weekly, he was very good. But it's a good floor tight end, right? Mm-hmm. Kelsey was very good, but it is a different quarterback. So there's that variable. To me, I would rather pay the value of the Delanie Walkers, who are in that mid-tier. I told you, Kyle Rudolph, I think, has a great opportunity, because if you look at that offense with Cook back on the field and Cousins there and Cousins' success with Jordan Reed and Vernon Davis over in Washington, I think Rudolph is really set up for a good season in terms of touchdowns, and that's what you need. You need those touchdowns. I'll tell you what, if old man Gates brings his boat back around and comes back to San Diego, I would not mind investing in him too, because what do I need? Tight end one, a touchdown. Give me the touchdown. I'm happy. And if I miss that tier of those safer guys, it's going to be, I'll take my chances on the Jake Butts and Ricky Seals-Jones and all those kind of guys, and maybe one of them hits, and I can play matchups with them.
So when you're streaming tight ends, are you going for that touchdown or are you going for targets?
I'm going for the red zone upside, because I think the main target tight ends, you know, unless Doyle has a rebound and stuff like that, they're looped into that top tier that I don't want to pay for anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And Delanie Walker, the only thing that worries me a bit is he's another year older. And, you know, if Davis is the guy that we think he's going to be, that could change things a little bit too. And it's a new offensive coordinator there with LaFleur. There's a lot of variables. You know where I'm still pining for Hunter Henry, and it's sad. Like he was that guy, and I'm just
crying my bed every night.
Oh my God, just to cry myself to sleep, Bobby. I mean, when that
he was the tight end. Like, I don't even need to think about tight ends this year. I'm not going to do any rankings. Just draft Hunter Henry. And I'll be fine.
He's going to be the perfect meeting of value and upside and all these things and ADP, and he runs good routes and he's in a pass first heavy offense in that sense with Rivers,
and he's been more efficient than Rob Gronkowski and Jordan Reed and, then that happened, and Travis Kelce, all these guys, and he's finally gonna get targets.
Now I'm depressed. This is just depressed.
We should do an entire episode just sulking on Hunter Henry. Tags, why don't you talk streaming tight ends really quick, then we're gonna go to the lightning round and try to cover a lot.
Yeah, so
really
Trey Burton is the make or break for me. I'm drafting Trey Burton. I'm doing so like with high confidence, and I understand that people have their reservations about how he's never produced at a top five level, but you know, the tight end position where I chase targets, I'm going to give a stat at the end of the show today. The stat of the day is going to be on tight ends. So I do chase targets. And when you talk about someone like Trey Burton, who the Bears made it a top priority, like higher than wide receiver, I would say they signed Trey Burton. Like, so Trey Burton, again, I keep mentioning it, like any chance he's had to play, he's done well. He's come from Doug Peterson's offense. He knows the Bears offense because Matt Nagy, they both come from Andy Reid. They both use the tight end a ton. I actually released an article today. It's the Allen Robinson player profile, which Bobby, I know you're going to love that. But Trey Burton, so looking at the Andy Reid offenses dating back the last 5 years, you go to the Doug Peterson offenses the last 2 years, and you look at the tight end position, they targeted tight ends and like the minimum was 26% of the time, I want to say, where the league average is 20%. Like 6% is a massive increase. When Nagy took over in the offense for Andy Reid, do you know how often he targeted tight ends? I think it was 44% in the games that he called the plays. So Trey Burton was a vital part of their offseason plan. It makes sense why they signed him to a long-term deal. He knows the offense. He's actually one of the guys that's teaching Mitch Trubisky the offense, because he knows it just as well as Nagy does.
And so, you know, the young QB, right, Tag? So they always like to fail safe down to the safety blanket of the tight end and check down a lot too. So my only question, and I know you want to get to lightning round, but real quick, Mike, do you have the same feeling I do? Like, I'm a big Trey Burton guy too, but I feel like he's become that guy that's been talked about too much, where now the value is starting to move up the board, where I'm like, oh God, I wish it wouldn't happen. And are you still comfortable with where it's moving to?
Well, that's the thing. So it's funny you said that, because I pulled up his ADP right before I started talking about him, because I wanted to see where it was at. So it's as high as 8 on MFL, but it's as low as 11 on ESPN. I have him right now as my number 9 tight end, but I think there legitimately is top 3 upside in Trey Burton this year.
I've got him number 7. Like, I'm guilty.
I believe that.
Oh, I'm with you. I'm higher. I'm on 7 too.
But if someone does reach on Trey Burton, that means you're going to be left with someone like Jordan Reed or Kyle Rudolph or even Delanie Walker. So, I mean, if someone's doing that, I'm fine.
I've got Rudolph and Walker higher than
that's
Burton.
That's what I'm saying. But the ADP, Delanie Walker has slipped below Trey Burton on MFL. So there's certain sites where some of these guys are going to fall to you. And I'm okay with those guys, too. But that's where the cutoff line is. I want one of those top 10 tight ends.
Yeah.
And if I don't, I'm probably just going to play the streaming game. I'm going to grab Vance McDonald late in my draft.
Okay. So an upside guy.
Basically, because I think Vance McDonald, you're going to see his ADP jump as we go through the preseason, because I think you're going to realize that he's the starting tight end. And him and Jesse James together last year combined for 88 targets. So if he gets the lion's share of those, Vance McDonald is going to be fantasy relevant. And he's actually one that plays the Browns in week one, you know, the team that has allowed the most fantasy points to tight ends like ever.
Mm-hmm. You know,
well, it's still the Giants. Don't hold off of the Giants.
Yeah, man, they were so bad.
The Giants are like, wait, hold my beer.
They didn't even try last year, though. Like, their defense, you could watch them. They were not even trying to play football.
No, but it's been like 4 years of the Giants and not being able to stop a tight end. I mean, it's brutal.
Yeah, Jason Witten was their nightmare.
For me with Trey Burton, it's he's the last tight end on the board, and if I don't have a tight end, I don't care where Trey Burton's going. I have to get him before it gets really ugly, and I have to go with... I was going to say Jimmy Graham because I've got him lower, but see, Jimmy Graham's gone like four rounds earlier. You know, before I have to go with a Jack Doyle or something, and who knows if he's even going to start because they love Eric Ebron, apparently. Guys, let's get into the lightning round here, and I'm just going to ask you just a really quick take or even a yes or no. Do you like handcuff running backs for your starting running back, Joe?
No, typically it's not something I do outside of deeper leagues. You know, when you're in a 14, 15 team league and the rosters are large, to me, then it makes a little sense to have it, especially if you've paid a premium for one and you know that the backup is the guy, you know, if it's a Connor or whatever, that kind of thing, that's fine. You know, I don't have a problem with that, but the notion of handcuffing running backs to me oftentimes is a waste of a roster spot. And then people hold on to them and they miss out on all the good things that happen in the first month of waiver wire, where if you're aggressive on waiver wire, you could get the next tight end that pops up and you can get the next wide receiver that breaks out and all these things. And instead you're still waiting on an, if somebody gets hurt. So I don't like that at all.
Yeah. You have to be willing to cut bait with them. I like backup running backs before the draft, and then after week one, you cut them. I mean, because here's the thing. Someone's going to get hurt during the preseason. If you own that backup running back and he becomes the RB1, you've got an RB2. You've got, in some cases, if it's a John Kelly, if it's a Justin Jackson, you've got somebody who could be an RB1. So you own them quick.
Trade them.
They're
worth more to the team that lost the running back, don't you think?
That's right. That's a great call. Tags, how do you stand on handcuffs?
No handcuffs for the first 4 weeks of the season. That's my rule. Because you're just going
to... Yeah, you like to get to know a player first before you get that comfortable with them.
Yeah, they're just roster fillers. They're roster fillers is what they are. And they're going to be the first person that you drop when someone's on the waiver wire. So why even waste the time? Grab someone on the waiver wire that could be the guy people are grabbing after week one.
Well, no, I would never own a handcuff during bye week season and all the injuries and stuff because you don't have the roster spots. You've got to hold your injured players in your bye week. Guys, and then you know, pick up somebody who's a depth piece. I would never have a handcuff then. I would have them in the first 4 weeks of the season.
I think handcuffing comes down to like protecting your starter, and I think that's when you get into later in the year. I'm just saying for at least the first 4 weeks.
Yeah.
But if you have bye week issues, obviously that's another thing to consider. Me personally, if I can get all my players on one bye, I'll take the loss.
I like that too. Yeah. I mean, don't go for it, but yeah, if it's there, that's pretty awesome. And I don't like direct handcuffs. I like the best backup running backs. Period. Like you don't need to handcuff Lamar Miller.
That's different then.
Go get somebody else's handcuff. Like, go get James Conner. Go get Justin Jackson if you've got deep rosters. Otherwise, there's no need to.
But yeah, Bobby, that's the difference. I want to say that there is a difference between holding on to backup running backs and handcuffing. Handcuffing is a completely different conversation, which is what I was talking about. Like, just because you have Melvin Gordon doesn't mean you need to reach to get Justin Jackson. Doesn't mean that at all. Best available running back who's got the most upside late in drafts. Like, if he gets a chance to start, that's the guy you have on your bench.
All right, next question, and this one should be fairly quick. Is it better to go up ahead in the draft and get your DST if it's the Jags, Rams, Vikings, Chargers, or do you just wait till the last round? Or if you're me, do you just not draft a defense whatsoever and just get another backup running back and then pick up a streamer right before the game starts?
You know what? You know, Gary Davenport does the, I mean, he's the defensive guru in my mind. He does all the IDP and defensive stuff over in the Black Book. And, you know, he and I have this conversation all the time. He's like, look, it's either you go up and do that and get one of those defenses that you think really has the right schedule and all that stuff together and the right talent, or you do the other thing. It's going in the middle where I think you kind of screw the pooch, mm-hmm. because every year there's a defense that pops up into the top 12 every single year that was outside of the top 12. And to it's almost the same thing with baseball and closers. Like, you either pay for the elite guys that you know are going to be brilliant and they're going to get their saves and their strikeouts and everything else, or you just wait and let the market come to you on the wire or whatever it is. But the worst thing you could do is pass out on depth at wide receiver and running back for a mediocre defense when there's still guys who can be useful on the board on your roster.
The difference between DST 5 and DST 18 is so minimal, but the difference between DST 1 and DST 5 is huge. Right. So I'm okay getting the Jags. They're going too early, though. Tags, what do you think?
I'm with Joe here. It's kind of like the quarterback conversation, where it's like, if I don't get Rodgers, I think people make the mistake of going with the quarterbacks in the middle of it. Like, that's the thing, is like, they can all be interchanged. You don't feel great about any of them. So I feel the same way about defenses, but the earliest I'm willing to reach for a defense is like, if it's the Jags. I think the Jags are the only one, actually. The Chargers I like, but they were supposed to be a value. The Jags are the defense that I would, I mean, maybe the 13th, 14th yeah. round, but
they won't be there. They're being drafted in the 9th or 10th.
That's stupid. That's stupid. No.
Yeah, so, that's really stupid.
I got the Jags last. No, I got the Jags last year in all my drafts. Like, legitimately, every single
Me
one
too.
Of them, because I
well,
took
no,
them.
Well, no, you didn't, because I was in leagues with you and I took them.
Well, I had Todd Gurley.
Don't,
so
no,
I
don't you even try to take credit. I had them and you got lucky with Todd Gurley in the playoffs.
I drafted Todd Gurley, sir. But anyways, I think we're on the same page here, is that don't take a defense that early. That's just stupid. But yeah. if you want to take them in the 13th round, that's fine. I have no issue with that. But outside of them, the Rams might take some time to gel. There's a lot of new pieces there. Like, I do like the Rams, but there's a lot of pieces. The Vikings, I mean, they've been good, but that doesn't mean they're a great fantasy defense. Chargers, agreed. I like a lot. But again, we're going to find someone else. We're going to find
Jags
another
are bust, and Jags aren't going to be there at the point where I'm comfortable taking them. So bust is the option.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Next question. We've got two more I want to hit on really quick here, Joe. Should you stack a quarterback with his best wide receiver? Like, if you have to reach to do it, is there any benefit to it whatsoever?
Well, you know, it's not something that scares me. This whole notion of, oh, I got too many guys on the same team. Well, crap, if it's the
who
Pittsburgh
cares?
Steelers and putting up a billion yeah. fantasy points, like, who gives a crap? You know, it's like, I don't understand that. It's like, well, I don't want a bunch of good players who are successful together. What? Yeah, okay, maybe there's that one or two games there, but I think it all comes down to what those players are. It's not something I'm reaching for, but it's not something that's going to stop me from taking a selection on the board either. And the pairings that you can do when you know you have, if you do have a high-end QB, I'll tell you what, in Superflex is something that I would take a little bit more attention to at times, that I might look a little bit, because then you have that situation where if you have two really good quarterbacks and you have, let's say even you end up with a Phillip Rivers and you got Keenan Allen, that's a very easy Superflex combination to have where you can ruin some people's weeks, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I get this question so many times, and I just always tell them, I don't care. Just get the best players. I don't care if they're on the Browns. Get them. Tags, what do you think?
I'm the same way. I don't ever aim for that. It's just whatever the best player is, that's who I'm taking. Yeah, I don't ever reach for those players.
And people are also worried about, like, you know, do I draft two wide receivers from the same team? I don't care. It's no advantage. It's no disadvantage. Just do whatever is the best player. Okay, and then when we get to the bench, this is what I want to ask about, because a lot of people are asking, you know, how do I develop my bench in the last rounds? Do I go for the depth pieces because I know injuries are coming, bye weeks are coming, or do I go for high upside guys? Joe, which side of the fence do you stand on, or is it just kind of a mix?
Well, because I'm somebody who really likes to dig in early with proven talent for the most part, or talent, I should say, that I really believe and trust in what they're going to be in their offenses, and I don't like to take a lot of risks early on that are unnecessary. I like to take, that's where I like to take the risk and the bonus and the upside. Those are the guys where I'm going to take a flyer on this guy or that guy and see, you know, maybe Dante Foreman's going to fall dramatically because people are terrified. Okay, I'll stash him on my bench and see what happens in a couple weeks after Pop, if he even ends up there when they start the season. It's that kind of stuff that I think can really change. Whereas, like we were talking about before, taking these handcuff running backs and stuff like that, it's kind of a waste. Your chances are 90% you're going to end up dropping them anyway.
Mm-hmm. Tags, what do you think, Ben?
I agree. I think that's the thing, is like, we're getting to the point now. It's like, these are the like little gimmicky things that people talk about. And I think that you and I, like you, me and Joe, are all on the same page with this, that I don't think you need it. It's just kind of like a waste.
Yeah, I agree. I would never draft, you know, just kind of a blah player like Allen Hurns mm-hmm. or DeSean Jackson or Nelson Aguilar. They've got no upside. They're guys that you are hoping will be a serviceable flex, and really you don't want to use them unless you've got an injury or bye. You can pick a lot of those guys up on the waiver wire almost every single week, and maybe they're not quite as good as an Allen Hurns, but chances are you're going to get someone, a Mohamed Sanu, someone's going to drop him, and he's going to be available for you to pick up. I want the high upside. Give me Ryan Grant, Andrew Luck's number two receiver.
Sure.
Give me Keelan Cole, who was the number two fantasy receiver over the last 5 weeks and led the league in yards over the last 5 weeks. I want those guys. I want the high upside guys. Same thing with running back. I don't care about, obviously it's not Frank Gore this year, but you guys know the same type. Like, people every year draft Frank Gore and they're like, oh, well, I'm never going to really use him unless I absolutely have to. And then he's just, you know, Frank Gore, 40 yards and maybe a touchdown. Go get the high upside running back, somebody like a Kenneth Dixon, who knows, Alex Collins fumbles, Kenneth Dixon gets the job. I want all high upside guys. I don't care if it's my last seven picks. Few of those guys are going to hit, and you're going to be in the money.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
And you know, a lot of people are asking about auction draft strategy and everything like that. That's an entire another show. We're going to do that episode in the future. So, Tags, why don't you close us out with the stat of the day? We'll chat about that for a second, and then we'll end the show.
Yeah, so there was obviously a conversation on the podcast yesterday, if you guys listened to it, with Chris Harris about tight end targets and him saying that they didn't matter and that touchdowns did. Well, I promised to come back with a stat to you guys that would show what I'm talking about. So if you find a target that is slated to see 85 plus targets, there's a greater than 80% chance that he's going to finish as a top 12 tight end.
Wow.
Regardless of
age.
That's
a great stat.
So since 2009, there have been 115 tight ends who have seen 85 plus targets. 90 of them have finished top 12. But here's the thing. Here's why touchdowns only mean so much. There has been just one tight end with less than 73 targets to finish top 10 in the last 5 years.
No way. And what a stat, man.
And the only one... Let's talk about this. Julius Thomas during Peyton Manning's golden season. So Julius Thomas had 62 targets, but he had 12 touchdowns. This relates to the conversation we had about David Njoku.
60 targets last year.
Yeah, and the fact that I don't see him having 80 target upside. I don't with especially
they
when
add
you
Jarvis
add in,
Landry.
They passed 600 times last year. They were in the top 10. You know, they had so many injuries. No wide receivers in the field. Like
Tyrod Taylor's
that
their
went
quarterback.
In, yeah, I mean, there's so many things going against him this year that to get to those marks, and that's why when I talk about saying I like David Njoku as a talent and I think that you should buy in dynasty leagues, but I would not draft him, especially at the tight end number 12. So even if he overcomes like literally every obstacle that's put in front of him, he's going to finish as maybe the tight end 10, and you're drafting him as the tight end 12. Congratulations.
What do you think, Joe? Are you on the David Njoku bandwagon right now, or do you agree with Tags and me that there's just no chance he gets the targets in this offense?
Well, that's, I think, the problem. Well, if Josh Gordon doesn't play, that might change a little bit.
That would change things
a little bit, yeah. For sure.
Well, if Josh Gordon's not going to play, then Dez Bryant is almost certainly going to be there.
Yeah, but my question is how fast can he integrate and what shape is he in and all that crap, too. And
true,
you know, Dez
true.
Bryant, yeah. You know, God, talk about the league of very good, not great. I mean, every time he's up against anybody who's worth their salt at corner, he shuts down. Like, for me, Njoku, I actually thought did an admirable job last year and showed you some flashes of why he could be a very good mm-hmm. tight end. But yeah, I have a hard time buying into that for fantasy for 2018. I think it's more of a dynasty investment for Njoku than it is a short-term one.
He's got so much talent.
Oh, like, yeah.
I get that. And I get that talent receives targets. But you bring in Jarvis Landry and you pass the ball less, and Josh Gordon's back probably for a full season. You still got Duke Johnson. You bring in Carlos Hyde, who caught passes last year. You get
Antonio Callaway, Corey Coleman.
Yeah, I just don't see it for David Njoku. Like, the talent's there, yeah, but like the talent is also there for Jarvis Landry. I mean, I don't think you can project 700 targets based on the talent of all these players, and then you've got Tyrod Taylor throwing 450 passes. That doesn't work.
Well, so that's my point, Bobby. So hold on a second. So Duke Johnson's a really good football player, right? He deserves targets. He's done really well with the touches that he's gotten. Okay, I like Josh Gordon as a talent. He's a phenomenal talent. I think Jarvis Landry's a great talent. I think David Njoku's a great talent. Why do you think I like the Browns as a roster? I think Corey Coleman's a little underrated right now. But in the end, there are only so many targets to go around, which is why Jarvis Landry in a standard league, I'm not joking when I say this. I mean, as long as Josh Gordon
is he in
back
your
in
top
field,
25 wide receivers?
He's not in my top 30 in standard leagues.
Yeah.
In PPR, I think I have him at 28. But there's only so many targets to go around, even though I like all these players. It's just, it's math.
Is that your assumption, too, that Taylor's the quarterback the whole season, or is that your assumption with Baker Mayfield being quarterback?
At least 10 weeks. 10 weeks,
yeah, I would say the bye week. I would say, and actually Hugh Jackson came out yesterday in an interview that I posted an update on. He said that Tyrod Taylor is going to get basically all of the first team reps and that he doesn't think Baker, he said, we're in a good place as a team. This is just like Hugh Jackson to say, oh, we're not going to create a competition or anything. Why the hell would we do that?
Yeah.
He's the anti Pete Carroll. So I like Tyrod. He's fine. And like I said, I think if you're a Baker fan, you want him to sit because just wait until Hugh's gone and then kind of worry about it from there.
Oh, so great. Baker Mayfield is going to be amazing. I can't wait.
Like, I said it before they even drafted Baker. I said, if you want to jump on a bandwagon before it's the cool thing to do, become a Browns fan because that team is going to be good once they figure out.
They just
got to
get something on the helmet. Come on, put something on the helmet for God's sakes.
How funny is it going to be, by the way, when they fire Hugh Jackson and they go get Jeff Fisher?
Oh my God,
I would shoot myself.
God,
like,
talk
tomorrow.
About going backwards. That's backwards.
I don't know.
It's possible. It's backwards.
It probably is, but
they'd
I don't know.
They at least win eight games with Fisher.
No, well, you ain't seen Jeff Fisher there yet. You didn't watch enough Rams games.
Oh, I watched all the Rams games, and I cried myself to sleep. He was horrible.
Oh, so bad.
Oh, man.
Hugh Jackson is that bad. He's won one game in this past two seasons.
That's so funny. No, they would win seven. They'd go 7-9 or 8-8 with Jeff Fisher, which is an improvement over Hugh Jackson.
You're right.
No, but from a fantasy offensive standpoint, you have to admit, like, exactly. You want to light yourself on fire if you're a Browns fan.
All right, guys, that's all for today's show. Joe, thank you for coming on.
Oh, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun, man.
And thanks to the sponsor of today's show, pristineauction.com. That's PRISTINE. They've got hundreds of lots daily. I just saw a signed Dan Marino Dolphins helmet out on their website today. So go check that out. Check out what they have for your team, for your man cave. And make sure to let them know Fantasy Pros sent you. Again, we've got a signed Keenan Allen powder blue jersey. It's beautiful. We're giving it away this weekend, so make sure to get your entries in. FantasyPros.com/contest. For Mike Tagliere, I'm Bobby Sylvester. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your football. I just wanted you to watch me dissolve.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.